So, the elements. This is my crude attempt to summarize it. I didn't start from scratch with this summary. I mean, I looked at how the book described, how the textbook describes each book, the elements. I even looked at how Wikipedia, you know, tries to summarize the topics. And I came up with something like this. We can expand on some of these things. So book three, it does a lot of stuff with circles, which is something we don't study as much today. You know, there's lots of facts that they prove about chords and tangents and so on that I had no idea. It's interesting stuff. It's just, we don't seem to directly apply it to our math nowadays because we do everything, with Cartesian coordinates. So we can get by without knowing a lot of this stuff. What is this geometric algebra stuff? That's the kind of stuff. Stuff like this. Like distributive law, you know, things like that. Now, for us, we might have an algebraic interpretation, right? And in terms of actual numbers, discrete numbers, natural numbers like 5, if this is 5, 7, 11, and this is 8 and 6, then they, you could do the dot style kind of proof. But if we're talking about just magnitudes, then you have to be careful here. So for magnitudes, we would think positive real numbers. See, with magnitudes, you have to remember that they come in types. Okay, that's my best way to describe it. There's lengths, areas, and volumes. Okay. And in Greek physics, they would also talk about weights as well. We think of real numbers as having a multiplication operation. I can take the real number pi, and I can multiply it by the real number square root of 2, and I get another real number. But that's a relatively recent idea. The Greeks could have defined multiplication of lengths, given some unit length. But they don't think of it that way. A length times a length is an area. A length times an area is a volume. So just like for us, if I tell you something is pi meters long and it's root 2 meters wide, you don't say, oh, the area is pi root 2 meters. You say the area is pi root 2 square meters. Okay. So they don't really have... They don't think of it as you can. They don't think of being able to multiply two real numbers like we do. So, for example, you would not compare root 2 times root 3 to 5, something like that. Unless you had the 5 as an area. But you couldn't compare length root 2 times length root 2 to a length of 5. You would compare, you'd have to compare it to an area of 5. So compared to our thought, we have a multiplication operation where you take two real numbers and you get out another real number, but their operation is two length magnitudes multiplied produces a area magnitude. Right? It's a different way of thinking about it. Now, and the book 4, that's the kind of stuff we're doing at the Pentagon, right? And there are constructions of all these things. You can make many kinds of pentagons. Many kinds of polygons. Regular. These are all regular. Make an equilateral triangle. Make a square. Regular pentagon. Regular hexagon. Regular 15-gon. And for any of these, there's an easy trick where you can... do angle bisections so that you can double things. So like if you can make a hexagon, a regular hexagon, then you can just bisect each angle. Bisect each edge and then make lines going out from the center. So I have a hexagon here inside a circle. Regular hexagon, right? From the center, you just bisect an edge, bisect every edge, and now you've got a regular 12-gon. So they could repeatedly do that. So they knew how to make lots of regular polygons. But there's, for example, there's no known ancient Greek construction of a heptagon, heptagon, seven sides. Not in the elements. There's no elementary construction. There's some other stuff that we'll talk about in chapter 4 where you might get a heptagon. And then, Now, these are very interesting. Okay, so chapter 10, they talk about ratios of magnitudes and how do they even define a ratio of a magnitude? So we think of, you in English you might say something like this. It's an analogy, right? And we think in terms of fractions. Sometimes people write the ratio in terms of with a colon. Now, how did they define ratios of magnitudes? They don't think of magnitudes as being numbers, but they have this idea of comparing them to it's essentially a way of comparing them to rational numbers. And really, it's from our modern point of view, you think of these as essentially real numbers. Like maybe you consider B to be the unit length, and then A is some other length. Like maybe A is the length of a semicircle with diameter B, so then this would represent pi, right? That ratio. Now, they have a connection to the numbers because they define this by comparing it to what we would consider rational numbers. They compare it to ratios of numbers implicitly. How do they define this? Very interesting. You have to multiply. These represent two lengths, right? Or they could be two areas or two volumes. Multiply them by whole numbers. Okay. So for all natural numbers, m and n, do a comparison. Okay? Compare, A to B. Like if A is pi times as big as B, then 4 times B is bigger than 1 times A. Right? And if you have if the ratio over here is also pi, then 4 times D should be bigger than 1 times C. So if you pick any two natural numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc., and then you look at the multiples of our numerator and denominator, then you should come out with the same comparison result, whether you use A over B or C over D. And the same should happen if you get equality for this one, then you should get equality for the other and vice versa. Now, from a modern point of view, we would think of this as what do we see this as? Rewrite this in terms of fractions. Divide both sides by what? Divide by m and divide by d. Right? So we're comparing it to a fraction. That's how we think of it. And if you look at this one, Right? How would we think of we're really for us we're really comparing this to a natural number. Again, this time divide both sides by b, and divide both sides by m. Right. So for us, we would think of it as, oh, they're just saying if you compare these two, what we would think of as positive real numbers to any rational numbers, you should get the same result. If these are the same real number, then if you compare them to the same rational number, then you better get the same relation, both less than, or both equal than, or both greater than. And, I read this in an interesting paper. I can send you a link to it about an actual way of defining the real numbers based on this idea. This definition of ratios and magnitudes goes all the way back, we think, to some Greek guy named Eudoxus. And so there's several different constructions of the reals, but the one came out sometime maybe in the 80s or so based on this idea. It's called the Eudoxus reals. And I can send you a link to the paper. Well, some of it may be a little bit hard to follow. Optional reading. If you have a bit of abstract algebra, it might be a little easier to follow the paper. But again, optional reading. So we think of, comparing real numbers or ratios of lengths to ratios of natural numbers. It doesn't even natural us, but in Euclid's Elements, ratios of numbers, which for them, they think of these as like the multiples, and one is a unity. They might not technically consider it a number. Weird. Little things like that. They put that all in a separate book, and they don't directly link them. So that's book 7. Just some interesting stuff. There's something from book 7 that we all should all still know. Maybe you've taken, this could come up in number theory or discrete math. Anybody know the Euclidean algorithm? I guess either nobody does or they don't want to admit it. Here's an example. What does it do for you? It finds the greatest common divisor. Okay. Here's like my streamlined description of it. Let's see here. Okay, here's an example. Start out with x greater than y, and actually, let me index that. Let's call this x0 and call this x1. I'm going to make a sequence of numbers now. Okay. The next number will be smaller. And what am I going to do? Here's the rule. You just, given your last two numbers, take this number, the left number, divide it by the right number, and get the remainder. You don't have to actually even know how to divide. You don't have to do long division. You can just repeatedly subtract this number from the bigger number until the remainder is smaller than the thing you keep subtracting. So, like, take away 2100, it's 2310. Take away 2100 again, it's 210. In our notation, you might say something like x2 is x0 modulo x1, right? Divide x0 by x1 and get the remainder. Okay, now repeat this. Okay. Take the last two numbers. And now do this divided by that to get the remainder. You can probably see it, right, that, well, 10 times this will be that, so there's a remainder of 0. Okay, when you get to 0, stop. Okay? So, take the last number before 0. That's the greatest common divisor. And this is actually, I mean, Euclid proves that this is the greatest common divisor, okay? So he doesn't just reproduce the algorithm, which he probably wasn't the first one to know about, but he also gives a proof of its correctness. Here's another example. So in this case, both of these numbers are multiples of 210. But you could have numbers that have no common factors except the trivial common factor of 1. Here's an example. I've picked up 3,267. And then let's see if there's any common factors with 1,400. Okay. Subtract off 1,400s from 3,267. You can take off two 1,400s, that's 2,800s, so you get 467. Now subtract off some 467s from 1,400, and you can't quite get three of them off. You can subtract two 467s, and then you have 466 left over. And then, subtract off one 466 from 467, and you get 1. And then, of course, if you subtract 466 ones from 466, you will get 0. So this time, the greatest common divisor is 1. So there are no non-trivial common divisors. And they would use different notations, of course. They say stuff like we might write this for like x divides y. But if you translate the, at least in our English translations of Euclid's Alma Agenda, was something like this: x measures y. Has some stuff about geometric sequences. streets are sequences that go on forever. They're finite sequences, so let me have it stop somewhere. And then we get this very interesting result in book 9, Geometric Series. Which in our modern notation, you know, we write it like this. But they don't actually divide magnitudes. They would talk about ratios, right? Equivalent way of stating it would be in terms of... you can imagine putting a 1 under here, for example, the way of stating this. Or you could... If these are lengths, then you could rephrase it in terms of area. Or you could write 1 times r where we have no fancy notation for it. We do stuff with either ellipses or a product symbol, whereas they just use a generalizable example, right? It goes like this. Imagine there are only 3 primes, A, B, and C. Well, then A times B times C plus 1, you can show, well, that is not divisible by A, it's not divisible by B, it's not divisible by C. So either it's a prime, in which case we've contradicted the hypothesis of only 3 primes, or it's divisible by something else, which again would be another prime. So there can't just be 3 primes. And it's assumed that you could imagine how to generalize this to say that likewise, for any finite number n, there are more than n primes.
Wrote a lot.
book 10 is some more number theory. We have this stuff here, and I'm going to mention one more thing I really like about book 9. Perfect numbers. Anybody heard of a perfect number? Did you read about that in the book?
Isn't it that their factors add up to the same number?
Exactly. That's a very fascinating thing. I'm not a number theorist, I'm no expert on them. But the Greeks considered perfect numbers. So way back when. And to this very day, we do not know if there is an odd perfect number. There's some more stuff to get to the, as they call them, incommensurable. And of course, what is that? E.g., for us, we think of, like square root of 2, right? Is irrational. So, trying to match more Greek thought, you would think of it as there's no multiple of the square root of 2 that equals a multiple of 1, right? Or let's make it, what are root 2 and 1? We make a picture, right? 45, 90 triangle, isosceles, right, triangle. So really think of it in terms of some magnitudes here. If they were commensurable, then that would just mean there was some multiple of A that equaled the multiple of B. And there's some other stuff, I guess, in 10 and 12, you have the, you see the method of exhaustion. I'll say a bit about that. And 11 through 13 is where you see the 3D geometry. For example, so you have the five regular polyhedra constructed and proofs of the correctness. So your regular tetrahedron, your cube, your regular octahedron, your regular dodecahedron, and your regular icosahedron. Then you have things like volumes of pyramids, that kind of volume formulas. And they actually have, the correct formula. They know the... Now, what is this, the method of exhaustion? This is, you could think of it as like the one of the first baby steps towards calculus, really. have to think about what would this mean? So you'd have a square, and then you make a circle diameter, one of the sides. Okay. And then you have another square. And then you have another circle. And so we're saying that, let me call this. Circle center O. This can have circle center O prime. I should put the. These are different lengths. Right. I'll call this A and B. And so. So they think in terms of ratios of magnitudes. How do they actually prove it? Well, they work with essentially a limiting argument. There's some places where they will skip a step, at least from our modern viewpoint. You know, there's some unstated assumptions when they do the limiting argument. So the idea is they already know that if you made, say, a triangle, right, inside there. Actually, we could circumscribe a square, right? They know that these squares would have if you took the ratio of those square areas, it would be the same as this target, right? Now I guess the primed one is the smaller one, so I should. So they already know that. Okay. Well, then what do they do? You make perpendicular bisectors, right? So that now you have a regular octagon. Okay. And so they're not so. And then again, they can prove. Using what they know about triangles. I'm not good at drawing. It's supposed to be like a stop sign, a slanted stop sign. And then you can repeat the process. Right? We could make. We can make a regular 16-gon and a regular 16-gon, and again the ratios would be the same. And the argument that they make is that if you repeat this, in our modern terminology, in the limit, the area of these polygons will tend toward the area of the circles. So that's how the argument goes. They don't have exactly the sense of our modern definition of limit, but they do have the idea that if at some point if these ratios between the areas of the circles were different than this one, then they say, okay, let's pretend we have two magnitudes that are in the two that are in this ratio, but different from that one. Let's assume we can find an intermediate ratio of magnitude, something between this and this. And then they argue that, if you had something in between these two ratios, you could do this process. And if you did this process long enough, eventually, if say this was smaller than that, eventually you could get these to go too far and would contradict having some magnitude in between these. But it's not exactly how we do a limit argument. It really does foreshadow the kinds of limit arguments we make nowadays when you think about limits of a sequence. If you're interested in this stuff, you have that website. You can go read an English translation of Book 12. Right? You can dig up, exactly how they make the argument. Right? The book just gives a very short summary. But I'll say that this, foreshadows, limits of sequences. They don't think in terms of actual infinite sequences. They just think in terms of, we can make this sequence go as long as we want, and it'll contradict any supposed difference in this in between these two ratios. So, if the ratios were different, we could run this sequence long enough to contradict that. And that will be where I end my remarks. And